Senator Bracey, Senator Gibson, Senator Rodriguez, Senator Stargell. A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Dana. A quorum is present. Please, everybody, if you would silence all the electronic devices. I'm going to verify that we're good. I've silenced my electronic device. And anyone wishing to testify before the subcommittee must fill out an appearance card and hand it to a member of the sergeant's office. Should you select to waive your speaking time, your position will be read into the record. Senators, based on the feedback and guidance we gave staff at our last meeting, we have now four additional staff-produced maps on our workshop agenda for today. Our feedback should continue to conform to the directives issued unanimously by the full committee. You will find a copy of those directives in your meeting materials. Our feedback and guidance to staff should also continue to be consistent with the cautions expressed in the memorandum we received from President Simpson, President-designate Pasadomo, and Leader Book. I would caution members in their questions, feedback, or guidance to staff today to express themselves carefully so that nothing said in the meeting is misperceived as motivated by any impermissible purpose. At our next meeting in January, I expect that we will submit a recommendation which will include a map or set of maps to the full committee. When Chair Rodriguez reconvenes the full committee to consider our recommendations, members may offer amendments at that time. As a reminder, the maps that we will be workshopping today are not final. Any alterations that are proposed, whether as guidance and feedback to the staff or as an amendment offered in the future, should adhere to the constitutional principles and apply them consistently throughout the state. I have been advised by counsel that these additional plans brought forward by staff today comply with the complex layering of federal and state standards and contain various trade-offs within the co-equal Tier 2 standards presented in each plan. I would also remind you that members of the public have been continuing to submit plans and comments to floridaredistricting.gov. If you are interested in reviewing them, these plans can be viewed on the submitted plans and get involved pages of the website. Are there any questions before we proceed to the presentations and public comment portion of the meeting today? Seeing none, Mr. Farron, you are recognized for a walkthrough of our new staff-prepared plans.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Senators, we've been working with the drafts that were published on November 10th and presented on November 17th in our last committee meeting. Specifically, we were looking for improvements and consistency in the application of the various trade-offs that were presented in those maps. And as with the first set of drafts, we set an ambitious goal to publish the maps several days ahead of the Senate's traditional deadline for publication of meeting materials. And the maps that we have to workshop today were made publicly available on November 24th. And that really meant that we had less than a week to look for areas of the map to adjust and improve upon. And so we took that time to closely review the district boundaries within each redistricting plan. We discovered that by making some very minor adjustments, we were able to achieve some measurable improvements. And although some of these may not be visible from space, the changes were made to most districts in each plan. For example, we took Plan 8010 and changed 37 of the 40 districts, and that has become Plan 8026. Plan 8012 changed 36 districts and has become 8028, so on and so forth. So this was done to ensure that there was consistent boundary usage, including placing district boundaries consistently on a median or specific lane of a primary or secondary road, in the middle of a river instead of using one bank or another, or correcting areas where a boundary inadvertently fell on a non-qualifying boundary. In the Senate plans, we were able to increase the use of political and geographic boundaries throughout, and that had the effect of keeping a few more cities whole and improving some of the visual compactness of the districts. We were also able to draw a couple examples of a configuration of a minority-majority African-American district in Miami-Dade County for the subcommittee's consideration. The next few slides will go through some of these examples. So this is an example where we were able to consistently follow a roadway. In the most recent set of Senate plans, the boundary of districts 10 and 16 has been drawn to consistently follow the eastbound lane of State Road 52 instead of the median or the shoulder of the roadway. These improvements resulted in an increase of boundary usage for both districts 10 and 16. This slide shows we were able to alter the boundary of districts 11 and 12 to better utilize political and geographic boundaries and improve the visual compactness. In the previous configurations that we workshopped last week, the boundary followed State Road 50 and then deviated from political and geographic boundaries until it reached the Florida Turnpike, and that can be seen kind of on the right side of each of those images on the screen. The revised version better utilizes easily ascertainable and commonly understood boundaries by following the Florida Turnpike more consistently, departing from it at Johns Lake to keep all of the population of the city of Oakland in District 11, and as a result, the boundary usage increases for both districts, with District 12 increasing its boundary usage by 3%. This is another example of where moving the boundary to a different geographical feature resulted in better utilization of political and geographic boundaries and improved the visual compactness of the district. In all previous versions of the Senate maps, the boundary of districts 20 and 21 followed Lumsden Road and the CSX Railway, and this is in eastern Hillsborough County. The revised versions, it follows Lumsden Road and State Road 60. And this configuration results in more visually compact 20 and 21, while also increasing the use of political and geographic boundaries for these districts. This example shows the use of municipal boundaries where no other qualifying boundaries existed. So in the previous versions, the boundary between districts 36 and 37 follows Northwest 36th Street, which is not classified by the U.S. Census Bureau as a primary or secondary road. And so in plans 8026 and 8028, the boundary deviates from the road to follow the municipal boundary of Virginia Gardens, which keeps it wholly within District 36 and increases the boundary usage for both districts. In circumstances where political and geographic boundaries bordered a large nature preserve or unpopulated area, municipalities were followed where feasible to keep cities whole. In this example, the boundaries of Coral Springs and Tamarack, which border the Everglades, are kept whole. And this is in plan 8026. This is an example where we considered the impermanent and changing nature of municipal boundaries and created an unpopulated split in the city of Eagle Lake to follow U.S. Highway 17 in between districts 22 and 26. This change is reflected in the newly released plans 8028 and 8030. And it actually makes this split consistent with the same area in 8026 and 8034. And so to kind of walk through some of the higher level metrics on these plans, this shows the changes to 8010 and 8026. And here we can see that we've kept three additional cities whole with all of their population in one district. So we're coming up from 360 to 363 cities kept whole. This slide shows the individual districts within Plan 8026 as compared to 8010 and their adjustments to the use of non-political and geographic boundaries. So in this circumstance, we would consider a decrease to be a good improvement. And so overall, we were able to decrease the use of non-political and geographic boundaries in 16 of the 40 districts. This is the comparison with plans 8012 and 8028. We've got two additional cities with all their population in one district, so that's bringing from 367 to 369 whole cities. We've decreased the average use of non-political and geographic boundaries by 1% and made some minor differences in population deviations and compactness of the districts, mathematical compactness of the districts. Here's the slide that shows the individual districts and their usage rates for non-political and geographic boundaries. And here we can see that 13 districts have seen a decrease in the use of non-political and geographic boundaries in Plan 8028. And then moving to Plan 8030 as compared to Plan 8014, we've got two additional cities with all their population kept in whole in one district, so that's going from 366 to 368. We've dropped the average use of non-political and geographic boundaries by 1%, so we're now down to 5%. And then there's some similar minor differences observed in population deviation and the mathematical compactness scores for Plan 8030. This sees a decrease in the use of non-political and geographic boundaries for 16 of the 40 districts, However, there's a minor increase in two districts, which is 35 and 36. And that's a direct result of an adjustment that was made to District 35, to, as I kind of mentioned before, making that a majority-minority African-American district in Miami-Dade County. And we'll talk a little bit more about that coming up. And then we'll look real quick at Plan 8034 as compared to 8016. And so this is a plan where we have two additional cities with all of their population in one district. So we've gone from 364 to 366. And we've observed negligible differences in the population deviation, so barely measurable. And then finally, Plan 8034 sees a decrease in the use of non-political and geographic boundaries for 11 of the districts, and a minor increase, again, to districts 35 and 36, which is a direct result of our redrawing that as an African-American majority-minority district in Plan 8034. And then the next few slides are kind of illustrate some of the more substantial changes, so we walked through some of the smaller ones. But just to give you guys a sense of the changes that were made, this one shows the change that we discussed along the Turnpike in the city of Oakland. It shows corresponding changes to this that were occurred to the southeast and then around the cities of Eatonville, Maitland, and Winter Park. The changes in these areas help balance the population between districts 9, 11, 12, and 13 and increase the political and geographic boundary usage and keep all of the city of Eatonville whole in district 11. And so the slide shows the configuration as it was in 8010 and 8014, as it was in 8012 and 8016, as it is in all four of the plans that we would be workshopping today. This next one shows districts 35, 36, 37, and 38 as drawn in Plan 8014 and is redrawn in Plan 8030. In 8014, District 35 had a black voting age population of 49.38%. In the revised plan, District 35 is drawn as a majority-minority district with a black voting age population of 50.07. District 35 is protected from diminishment under Tier 1 of the Florida Constitution. In both plans, the opportunity for African Americans to participate in the political process and to elect candidates of their choice is not diminished. The Benchmark Senate plan has two African American districts, one in Miami-Dade and one in Broward County. One of those was a majority-minority, and the other was an effective minority district. And so in the effective minority district, which was District 35 in the benchmark, the black voting age population is 47.79%. In our plan 8014, which is the one on the left on the screen, both African American districts were drawn as effective minority districts. So Senate District 33, which is the one in Broward County, was at 46.24, and Senate District 35 was at 49.38%. And that's for black voting age population. The other plans that we workshopped at our last meeting contained a majority-minority district in Broward, so one that was over 50%. Plan 8030 is drawn to provide the select subcommittee with a configuration that contains the majority-minority district in Miami-Dade and the effective minority district in Broward. And then lastly, in plan districts 34, 35, 36, 37, and 38, this slide shows us how they were drawn in Plan 8016 on the left and as redrawn in 8034 on the right. In Plan 8016, District 35 has a black voting age population, again, of 49.38%. And in the revised plan, it's drawn as a majority-minority district, again, with a black voting age population of 50.07. Both Plan 8016 and Plan 8034 also have a majority-minority district in Broward County, and so the Select Subcommittee now has a configuration to consider that contains two South Florida African-American districts that are drawn as majority-minority districts. And one other note, Mr. Chairman, is that in this plan, we did have to balance population between Senate District 38 and 34 as a result of the adjustment to District 35. Didn't have to do that in the other plan. And I will freely admit that we mistakenly published a plan as 8032 that didn't have that executed correctly, and so we had to republish 8034. So if anybody's wondering what happened to 32, that one's on me. And that, Mr. Chairman, would be the presentation for today.
Thank you, Mr. Farron. And Thank you for the acknowledgement that even our amazing staff are human. So that's totally understandable and appreciate that clarification. With these changes, senators, are there any questions or discussion amongst the body? Seeing none, now we will go to public comment. Do we have any public? We do have public comment. Ms. Cecile Schoon, representing the president of the League of Women Voters of Florida, you are welcome to approach the podium. Thank you. I pronounced your name correctly, right? Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
French version.
And you are recognized.
Thank you very much. Cecile Schoon, president of the League of Women Voters. Do appreciate the maps and also having it right here in front of me to look at. I would say that the kind of analysis that was presented with the changes is exactly the kind of analysis that I would like to independently look at and verify myself at some of the other benchmark districts and the nearby districts, as was done here. When you adjust for whatever reasons, trying to match tier one, which are the mandatory requirements of the increasing the access for racial minorities and language minorities' ability to choose a representative of their choice and equal opportunity to participate in the process, electoral process. When you do that, as you did in this example, making a small change to get a better number or to decrease the going across city boundaries and things like that, by this example, you had to make other changes in the surrounding districts. And that is one of the reasons why, like 34, 35, 36, 38, 7, and 38, all of them were basically impacted by a relatively modest change to lessen the impacts on the tier two guidelines, is what I understood was said. And in the same manner, we need to be able to check what's going on if we tinker with some of the other benchmark areas and some of the other new growth areas. And in order for us to do that, we believe that we need the precinct level information so we can get the voting age population of the Black community and the Hispanic and any other language and racial minorities. And we understand that the legislators have access to this information as was provided to them by contract with FSU. And we need that information to be able to independently verify and check. And I really appreciate your staff, mentioning, hey, everybody in doing your best, you're gonna not always hit the mark right, and the bullseye, and you were able to make a change. Well, we think that's the responsibility of citizens to be able to track that and look at it ourselves, and different voting rights organizations, partisan or nonpartisan, the League is nonpartisan, but each side should be able to verify that information. And you demonstrated the need to do that by your analysis here this afternoon, because you had to, when you tinkered in one area, again, to improve the splitting cities and other geographical areas, because you wanted to lessen that, which is part of our tier two requirements, you ended up having to tinker all around. Well, we need access to that information so we can see if there's ways that we can tinker in other ways that can benefit increasing the mandatory requirements, which are the increasing the opportunities for the language and racial minorities. And so we're not understanding why we're not able to have access to the information when you yourself are using it to confirm and make these changes. Well, the citizens would like that information, and citizen groups would like that same information. So you make that public request for that data and the analysis that you used in order to determine the racial voting age group, so that we can basically look with you and see if there's any other changes like the map that you had to change. We just want to look with you and confirm with you. And you've given so much of the information already that there's that little missing gap that we would like to be able to do the same kind of tinkering with the in-depth data that could assure us that the basically fair districts are being abided by, which our read of that is to maximize the opportunities for political involvement and to choose a representative of their choice of these minority groups. So we would continue to ask for that information.
Thank you very much, Ms. Schoon. I appreciate your testimony today.
Thank you
for your participation. And I have been assured by staff, and that's what I was leaning over, is that all the data that we are utilizing is available on our software and is accessible to the public. With that said, I don't see any further public testimony. Senator Gibson, you are recognized.
Thank you, and thank you for that information, Mr. Chair. And just for public sake, it's on the website in a particular, is it labeled in a certain way, or just so we can make sure everybody.
I'm going to defer to Mr. Farron on that to be able to say specifically where it is on the website. That way everybody could go ahead and access it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Specifically, so all the data that we use to analyze our plans, conduct a functional analysis, review the compactness, the boundary analysis scores, all of that is built into the redistricting application. So that's accessible to anyone that wants to get in there and look at the districts that we've drawn or draw their own districts and run those analyses. They can do that. It's all the same data. And if it's specifically precinct level information, there's links to that on our website that is housed by the Division of Elections. And so that's the input data that is available there. If anyone wants to go download that data directly from the Division of Elections and the Supervisors of Elections, that's available to do so. It's publicly available information.
Comments? Nobody else? I'm going to go ahead and recognize Senator Gibson for, actually, you know what? I'm sure I have some closing comments that I, would also like to put down here. So as I said before, what we're going to do, senators, is reconvene in January. At that point in time, we're hoping that we might be able to make a recommendation or recommendations to the full committee. We do have a good 6 weeks ahead of us, I believe, right around that amount of time from today to when we would probably reconvene again. And so with that information and that ability, we're asking staff to kind of take the feedback we've received today and go back to the drawing board and seeing if there's any other necessary changes that we should look at, and if so, report back. And seeing no other further questions or comment, I'm going to recognize now Senator Gibson's motion to adjourn, and without objection, we'll stand adjourned.